Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Zucker, the doc in Docology. Most of us have grown up taking it for granted that fluoride was in our water, helping to prevent tooth decay and many serious conditions it can cause throughout the body. But now, fluoridation is under attack. In fact, the state of Utah has just banned fluoride from its water systems. It's actually the first state to do so. But the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., says that all states should follow Utah's lead, citing controversial studies that suggest cognitive delays in children who consume fluoridated water. But decades of research has shown conclusively that fluoride in tap water helps prevent cavities, especially in children. And CDC also hailed fluoridation as one of the most significant achievements of the 20th century, right up there with vaccinations and identifying tobacco as a major health hazard. So what's the evidence here? Is fluoride a friend or a foe when it comes to our children's health? Well, to help us bite down on the facts, I'm thrilled to welcome Dr. Brett Kessler to the show. Dr. Kessler is the current president of the American Dental Association. He's a practicing dentist, a leader in the field. He's testified before Congress on oral health, and he's an endurance athlete to boot. So welcome, Dr. Kessler.
Hi, Howard. Thanks so much for having me here.
Oh, it is great. It is great to have you. Let's start with the basics. I thought we'd start with, what is fluoride? Why is it in our water? And who added it?
So fluoride is a mineral. And it was originally found, so I live in Denver, Colorado. And back in, I think, the 1950s, Colorado Springs, some areas in the springs had the teeth of the kids had these brown spots. And they did some studies on that and found a high fluoride content in the water. Also, they found that this community had much less decay, dental decay, than any other communities around. And so they started looking, what was the common factor here? And it was fluoride. And then they decided to, let's study this and see how it works and see what the optimal level should be, so it doesn't cause those brown spots and among other things. But they came up with a public health initiative to put the fluoride in the water at a certain level. And it decreased cavities in our population by over 25%.
Wow. And so they added it, and then other states obviously followed from that.
Yeah, and many areas it's naturally occurring, and it became a national public health initiative, and it was coined as one of the top 10 public health initiatives of the 20th century because it was so impactful to the community.
And how much of a reduction has it caused in tooth decay in children and adults, I guess, is for that matter?
Yeah, so the studies show about 25%, but anecdotally, I'm a Gen Xer. Okay, I'm 57 years old. My parents, when they grew up without fluoride. Every single tooth in their mouth had a filling placed when they were teenagers because the cavities and the decay rates were so high. My generation has much less decay associated with that. And then the younger generation says even less, all as a result of fluoride.
And fixing dental caries obviously is a huge deal. As an anesthesiologist, I know how many times you have to bring kids to the operating room to put them asleep, right? To give them anesthesia in order to fix those cavities in little kids. So yeah, that's another challenge for them. So why, if that's the case, if we've seen that it's been so helpful over all of these decades, why are we removing it now? Why is Utah, that's your neighboring state, why is Utah doing something like removing fluoride? Because these are local decisions. What do you think is behind all of that?
There's been an anti-fluoride movement that's been in place for decades. And it's all based on research of saying that it lowers the IQ in kids. And the studies really have not been good studies. They haven't been valid studies. Some of the studies had fluoride levels at much higher levels than here in the U.S. And, too much of anything is a bad thing.
Right.
Our current Secretary of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr., has been against fluoride for a long time and community water fluoridation. He says fluoride and toothpaste is okay, but CWF is really what he's trying to get rid of, and it's kind of picking up along political lines. I hate to say that. And there's a libertarian mindset right now that everyone should have a choice and not be mandated to have medication. And, you know, I understand that to an extent, but we're going to see, based on the science, we're going to see an increase in dental decay, an increase in cavities in kids within the next 2 to 3 years in the lower income socioeconomic demographics. And these are kids and these are families that don't have a choice. Some of them can't afford toothpaste. Many of them have zero access opportunities to go to the dentist. And so what the community water fluoridation does is it's a public health initiative. So it helps the entire public and it provides equity. Okay. There's an economy attached to that first filling that's placed. And if you can avoid that first filling, you know, you're not dooming someone to dental work for the rest of their life. That first filling turns into a bigger filling over time. Then it turns into a bigger filling. And then the tooth cracks and then it needs a crown. Then potentially needs a root canal and then another crown. And then an extraction and then an implant and then another crown. There's a lot of money that will be invested just because that person will need that first filling. And we can avoid that by doing this tried and true public health initiative, community water fluoridation.
Well, I read somewhere that it said $1 invested in water fluoridation will save you $20 in dental treatment costs. So right there, for communities, even 1,000 people or more. So right there, that's surely what you said. It really will save in healthcare costs in the long run. But back to what you were mentioning with RFK Jr. So in a lot of ways, he's saying that there's a neurotoxin here as a result, because that's what everyone was talking about. That's too much. The fluoride will cause a problem. And the study you mentioned, there have been many studies, but I just want, you know, for everyone to know, there was a JAMA pediatric study, which was just a couple months ago, that looked at all the other studies, and it showed that the data isn't really that strong on a potential neurotoxin. So maybe you could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, the studies that they're showing where it's neurotoxin, the science wasn't good. The studies weren't well designed. And the water the fluoridation levels were over double what it is here in the US. And so what we need to do, and I'm calling out RFK, please, if you're concerned, let's do a study. The American Dental Association, two of our core values, science and evidence-based. We make the best decisions based on the science that's in front of us. If that science proves something different than what we're doing, we change. That's what science is. That's what evidence-based is. So, you know, we're calling them out. Let's do a study. We have people in place in Utah where they remove the fluoride from the water to get a baseline right now. What is the caries rate in kids? And we're going to be tracking that over time to see, is there going to be an increase? Science says yes.
So with the neurotoxin issue, and just so to explain, it's basically something which is dangerous to the brain. And they were saying that it will drop kids' IQ, right? And so the issue was that as a result of the fluoride, the children's IQ goes down, but that hasn't been shown to be the case.
It hasn't been validated in any way, shape, or form.
Back to what you mentioned about RFK Jr., the American Dental Association, I understood that you wrote a letter to him, right, last month, month or 2 months ago. Did he respond? Did the government respond about your telling them, let's look at this scientifically?
We have not heard a response back at this point. We did write a letter asking to help us fund a study. But in the meantime, the CDC Oral Health Division had been let go completely. And the CDC Oral Health Division, among other things, one of the things they do is track water fluoridation across the country. And they're the ones that aggregate all the cavity rates around the country. So now we've lost the ability to track this centrally. But no, we have not heard about them willing to work with us on a study. I am calling him out right now because dentists and oral health professionals think that fluoride in the water is a good thing, but it's to mitigate the problem. Cavities don't just happen on their own. Cavities happen because of our diets. High sugar content, high level of ultra-processed foods that Americans consume that we're dependent upon, cause these cavities. Quit going after us. Quit trying to vilify the dental profession. All we're trying to do is help mitigate the problem caused by big food and the food industry.
Well, he did mention some of the things about sort of the chemicals and food and all these other things, but it all ties together. So what you're basically saying is, okay, you could address some of these sugary substances that kids are eating, but also address how we make sure we deal with the dental issues that occur as a result of that. So basically, you're also saying that CDC was your partner on all of this, and now your partner is sort of not there.
Yeah, we've lost a lot of resources, and I hate to say that I really can't believe this is happening, but it seems like we're dismantling public health. Yeah. Public health, a good public health initiative flies under the radar so no one knows it. Okay, so again, I'm going to go to my parents' generation. They saw people with polio. They saw people in the iron lungs who, you know, and who didn't live as a result of that. We didn't see it. Does that mean that we should stop vaccinating for polio? No, we need to do that because it's working. Fluoride works. And so we need to keep it going.
I agree with you 1,000%. I feel that public health is under attack, and all of the science that we have shown to be effective in preventing problems is slowly being removed. People aren't listening to, which is terrible. Whether it's fluoride vaccines, we go down the list. There are so many different issues. I was talking to someone about, you know, tobacco and how we've been working to drop the number of kids who smoke. So there's a lot out there, but that's for, you know, a longer conversation on some of those issues. Back to this issue about the amount of fluorides, because we say 0.7 right milligrams per liter, 0.7 milligrams per liter. The WHO says 0.5 to 1.5 milligrams per liter. But one of the things that they have been saying, and I guess those who are against fluoride, is that it's in toothpaste, it's in mouthwash, it's even in food. And as a result of all of that, there is too much fluoride that kids are getting, as well as pregnant women. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Several years ago, we evaluated the fluoride levels, and the EPA actually recommended lowering it from 1.5 parts per million to 0.7 parts per million because of the multiple sources where fluoride is right now. And again, we are a science-based organization, and science showed, hey, we need to lower it. And we agreed. And so, the EPA now has, you know, 0.7 as the standard. That is also under, in controversy right now. And we are in a lawsuit right now to see if it's going to remain there or not with the EPA.
So I have little kids, and they see a pediatric dentist, and the dentist said it's all right for the kids to swallow the toothpaste. So I'm just curious, like, is that something which is not good? Because it's a little hard for a little kid to spit, you know, the toothpaste out, but they say it's okay if they swallow it. But I'm just looking at it and say, well, there's fluoride in there. So is that a problem or not?
So kids should have kids' toothpaste that has an appropriate amount of fluoride, because we know they're going to swallow some. A full adult toothpaste for kids is too much for kids. It's too much. And so pediatric specific toothpaste is recommended in that arena. But again, as I said, most, you know, people, middle class, you know, and upper class will have access to fluoride toothpaste if they choose to. There's a growing movement to not do that in those demographics too. But the lower income socioeconomic demographics, a lot of them don't have choice, and they can't afford the toothpaste, and they can't afford access to dental care. And that's when, as you mentioned, the cavity rates are so bad in these kids that they have to go to the operating room to get treated. And there's in some places over a year wait, and these kids are suffering so badly. One of the biggest cause of school absenteeism is dental problems, and it affects their ability to learn if they're in pain or they're infected. This is going to be, it's going to be devastating. And then on the other side, we're scared about Medicaid cuts, because Medicaid is the dental benefit plan that helps those kids get the access to care that they need, because dental care for children is deemed an essential health benefit by the Affordable Care Act. And they're challenged right now, and if we lose that funding, we're going to lose providers to help this really important situation.
Yeah, I saw what I remember, like I said, as a pediatric anesthesiologist, I saw how involved it is, how sometimes uncomfortable the kids are afterwards. And the operations are long for these kids when they're having these dental caries fixed, dental cavities fixed. And you're right, the kids, the lower socioeconomic kids, end up in a tough situation, because it's not only the issue of dental care, but it's also what they're eating, right? This all ties together. It's like the food that they're getting, which sets them up for that. You mentioned at the beginning about the discoloration, right? So that's the problem with too much fluoride, right? And so,
correct.
So what other problems can occur if there's too much fluoride, and how do we make sure we monitor for that to be sure that's not going to become a problem?
And so water levels can be monitored. Many pediatric dentists have the ability to do that if water samples are collected and brought there. And so we can, determine, especially areas that have well water, where the fluoride may be already naturally occurring and it may be too much or it may be absent. And so it could be monitored and adjusted accordingly. What other health problems, there fluorosis, which is the spotting of teeth, the neurotoxicity, as was mentioned before, at the very high levels. There's some studies that show brittleness of bones, anything too much of anything could be a bad thing.
So Canada, I just want to bring up a province in Canada, right? So in Calgary, the city in Alberta, Canada, they had fluoride in the water, then they took it out, and then they saw a problem with kids under the age of 5. And yep. So can you talk a little bit about that? I'm sure you're probably familiar with that, because now they're putting, what I heard is that they're putting it back in the water, and probably within this month or next month, because it's supposed to happen real soon.
Yeah, it was a quick study, and many communities around this country as well, like Buffalo, New York, they saw an increase in decay in kids within 2 years. They're the most vulnerable population, and that's where we're going to see it the most. And so that's what they saw, a 25% increase. That's what we're basing this on, because it's happened in the field. And we know it's going to happen here. Why are we going to subject our kids to a lifetime of dental problems?
What's happening in the rest of the world? I mean, we look at the United States, but dental caries are a problem everywhere. So what's happening if we looked over in Europe or Asia? What can you share a little bit about what's happened elsewhere?
Yeah, there's many countries in Europe that don't fluoridate their water, and the decay rates are way high. There's many countries in Asia and South America also that are challenged with fluoride, and we see the decay rates really high. And we also see, their ability to smile and their ability to chew is definitely affected. There was a joke, and I've got great friends from England, but there was a joke when an English person comes into my dental office, I knew I was going to get a lot of dental work out of this person to do, because they had horrible teeth as a rule. And so we see it all over the place. Like I said, community water fluoridation was one of the top 10 public health initiatives in the 20th century because of such good that it did. And Europe hasn't caught on to the level in many countries, and we're hoping that they do. But the there's a world version of organized dentistry called FDI, and FDI stands strong with, so all the dental leaders around the world are part of this, and FDI stands strong about the benefits of community water fluoridation.
I lived in Switzerland, so I remember traveling around Europe, and that's exactly what you said, that the dental issues were dramatic. Let's leave it at that. I want to go back to something you mentioned about RFK Jr. and the ADA wanting to work with him to do a study. I'm curious about that, because how does one do a study? You don't want to have some kids get something that not get something, which you know helps. So how do you go about doing that so that we could, you know, what would be the ask of RFK Jr. on something like that?
Yeah, so study design, and this is just me riffing off the top of my head. You know, let's get some baseline decay rates on certain age groups in many different communities across the country. Some that have fluoride in the water, some that don't have fluoride in the water. Let's compare that to Calgary in Canada. Okay. And then, as I mentioned before, Utah, we are setting up a baseline to see where we're at right now and monitor the changes that are going to happen over the next several years. Right. And that's what we're looking for. Let's just start counting. And then my question to RFK is, how are they going to monitor the neural levels? Okay. The IQ levels. Okay. Because they're saying it's lowered the IQ of kids several points. Are they going to do a baseline of what the IQ of kids are right now? And are they going to show the changes over several years, which I guarantee you there won't be any.
So that sort of undermines some of the study and the data and the accuracy of the data, I guess, in many ways. It's interesting because you're right near Utah. So you could actually do a really fascinating study because the communities could be neighboring communities and really see what happens as a result of that, you know, with the water systems. I want to zoom out for a second, away from dental caries, fluoride for a minute, because oral health is so important. And I think sometimes people don't recognize how it's tied to so many other things. So maybe you can share with me a little bit about the other issues, whether it's heart issues or brain issues or just overall well-being that people have to be concerned about as a result of dental, oral issues, inflammation, dental issues.
Yeah, so I view the oral cavity of the mouth as a litmus paper to the rest of the body. We see inflammatory processes alive and well in our patients. And I think there's a huge movement in dentistry to reduce the amount of inflammation in the body. So many chronic diseases are inflammatory based. We know that a patient with periodontal disease, and if they're a brittle diabetic, they have a very tough time adjusting their sugar levels or keeping it under control. But if we take care of their periodontal disease, their gum disease, their sugar levels are much more manageable. And so we have got a great opportunity here in dentistry to improve the overall health of our patients. We have diagnostic testing now that can test the microbiome of the mouth and see how that affects the rest of the body. We have DNA testing to see if you're prone to certain chronic diseases and how dentistry can, you know, be a screening module for these patients. And if we can catch these chronic diseases before they're actual chronic diseases that can debilitate and cost a lot of money to the system, you know, I think we'll make America healthy just by doing that. Back in January, the ADA, we published an op-ed in the Washington Post, basically saying to the world, hey, we're the American Dental Association. This is who we are. This is what we stand for. This is what we need to do to make America healthy again, especially from an oral health perspective. And a lot of this is raising the oral health literacy. So going back to the fluoride issue, if we're losing the fluoride, we have to have America brushing and flossing their teeth at a level that they never have before, because they're going to get problems. Okay. And so, I followed that op-ed up with a letter to President Trump and every single member of Congress describing all of these connections between the mouth, the oral cavity, and the system, the whole body, and the improvements that we can make. We can decrease, you know, we can decrease the cost of treating diabetes. We can decrease the level of Alzheimer's in our patients, GI problems, premature low birth weight babies all have an effect from the oral cavity, from a diseased oral cavity that we can improve.
So I have to ask you, what did Trump say? Or what did the Congress say? Did you get anything back from anyone, from Congress, from the president, from the secretary? Who wrote back?
Not directly, but we see comments in the news. So Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana stands strong with, you know, the science that the American Dental Association is bringing forward. The mayor of Miami-Dade County, the city council wanted to remove fluoride. The mayor's like, no, the ADA says this. And that's all a direct result of us, you know, pushing out these statements. And our statements have been viewed by billions of people as a result of you know, never before has oral health been elevated to the level of the president. Okay. This is a topic that has never been this, you know, this prevalent in the news right now. And we're taking full advantage of that to try and improve the literacy, the oral health literacy of our population.
I have to look at the map because there's a map of the United States of which states are now considering removing fluoride. I mean, because it could be a county level, like Florida, some of the counties are doing that. Utah, obviously, at the state level. I have to look at Louisiana. I knew there was some other spots. I'm not sure if they are or not. So I'd have to go back and check on that one. Mm-hmm. And also heart disease obviously is tied to, you know, inflammation from oral health issues. And the last thing I also wanted to mention on that point is about the aging population, right? Because if they have dental issues, they may not be eating. And the last thing you want is somebody who's elderly not to get enough nutrition and all the things that happen as a result of that as well. Yeah. I mean, comment on that. But I also want to ask you about Medicare for a minute. Well, as we're talking about aging, and it ties right into that. What should Medicare cover for dental care? Because this is a huge issue as well. And we want to be sure those who are older are getting the coverage they need.
Yeah, somewhere along the line, the dental benefit world separated from the medical benefit world. And so we're trying to reconnect the mouth to the body with all the payment systems that are in place right now. So with private dental insurance and private medical insurance, kids, you know, Medicaid, which is, you know, basically benefits for people of lower incomes. Medicare is benefits for people of age. Okay. And, you know, baby boomers don't have access to care. Many of them, you know, live most of their life as employees, and the benefit, the dental benefit, was tied to their employer's employment status. Then they, when they retired, they lost that and they feel they can't go to the dentist. So right now we have 80 million seniors that don't have access to dental care through a benefit system. And so they have to self-pay. And that's a tragedy as far as I'm concerned from the profession standpoint. So we're looking for ways to find access to care for them. Medicare may be the best way to go. And, you know, but it's very controversial. It's controversial politically. It's controversial within the dental profession, you know, and you know, in the medical profession, you know, a lot of docs aren't happy with Medicare. Dentistry, I think, has a great opportunity to help this vulnerable population, and they're complicated to treat because of the comorbid medical problems that may be in place. And so we, whatever benefit plan that we try and design for this aging population, you know, the dentists have to be paid a fair fee. There has to be minimal administrative burden that, you know, to get the payments for it. There has to be a comprehensiveness of the dental care. Okay. So, you know, let's talk about this for a second, that, you know, why has it been culturally accepted that we could get a titanium post here in our hip if we have degenerative joint disease in our hip, but we can't get a titanium post in our mouth if we're missing a tooth? Okay. Why is it that medicine has been afforded the opportunity to provide its finest care to their patients, no matter what a demographic they are? If they're rich, they're poor, they're young, they're old, they're male, they're female, they're black, they're white. Okay. Medicine is offered the opportunity to provide their best care to their patients. Why has dentistry not been able to do that? The dental benefit system does not provide a comprehensive a plan that allows us to provide our finest care. And that's got to change.
Well, you've raised some great questions there. And I guess we got to sit before Congress and ask them that, and maybe have an appointment down in Washington at either the Health and Human Services office or the White House to say, what's our plan here on these issues to make sure they get the care they need. I wanted to ask you one quick question before we go to our subscribers who have questions, I'm sure, is what would be the three takeaways you would give us today about oral health, fluoride, and oral health in general?
So oral health is health. That's the bottom line. Okay. We improve oral health. We improve overall health. And that's a fact. Community fluoride, water fluoridation works. And finally, we need to continue the funding, not only for dental benefits, especially in the public health space, but we need to continue the funding for the research that will not only tell us what we're doing, how we're doing, but it'll drive the profession forward. And with progress, we can deliver better care that's more efficient. And we've seen that over the last 25 years with the improvement in the technologies that we have in our dental field.
And bring back the team at CDC who were your partners at ADA. So
yes,
that would be
please,
helpful.
please.
That's a message out there to those who are making those decisions. Well, we've had a chance to talk about a lot of topics, and we could go on for hours about all these different issues, whether it's fluoride or just oral health in general. But now it's time to turn to our most important guest, which is our subscribers. And so we're going to tee up the questions for that. I always mention at this point that the podcast is for informational purposes. If you have questions about your personal health or your dental health, whether it's your health in your body, health in your mouth, you should talk to your doctor, your dentist, the healthcare providers, because they know your particular medical history and your dental history as well. So let's turn to our subscribers and hear what they're wondering about now. Kat,
yeah, you're up. So I'm going to ask the first question. I'm actually curious to know whether you foresee sort of any alternative approaches or dental like treatments that may replace fluoride in the future for the benefits that it has.
Yeah. So the ADA merged with the Forsyth Institute, which is one of the world's premier research and science and research institution in oral health. And we are looking at fluoride replacements. There are some products on the market, that are full of, calcium hydroxide, which is what teeth are made of. And so it remineralizes teeth. There's some materials that can remineralize teeth, like Curodont. It's a new product that has just recently been introduced in the U.S. We're seeing great, benefits from that. We can actually reverse cavities without putting a drill to the tooth. So we are looking at alternate modalities to help reduce the amount of decay. But why can't we stop the root cause? Sugar, ultra processed food. We're doing these to mitigate the problem. Quit trying to vilify us. We're trying to help. We're putting ourselves out of business. We're trying to, we get paid to fill cavities, and we're trying to put ourselves out of business. That would be the best thing ever if we can remove cavities from the population.
I always think about that. It's like, right, you're trying to get these kids not to have cavities, and that's part of the major thing that that people, kids go to the dentist for, routine healthcare, but also to address cavities.
Yep.
Kat, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And perfect. A lot of that I wish I had known before I had to go get a few cavities filled.
That is so true. That's so true. When I just a point, I was thinking about what you were saying about dental cavities and the work that's being done. I remember when I was a college student, I was a major in anatomy, and all of the histology, all of the research that I was looking at, all the slides I looked at was always about dental work. All the research was done about how do the teeth grow and all the cells that are in the teeth. So it's really pretty interesting, the whole thing.
Yeah, we're actually, for many years, we've been looking at stem cells. Can we direct stem cells to replace, to reform teeth? We're looking at, can stem cells, revitalize a tooth and avoid the need for a root canal? There's so many cool things coming down the pike, but we need to keep the funding going to deliver, actual, marketable products and services that will be efficacious.
Well, is it possible? What's the latest on stem cells? That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Like, will they be able to sort of fix some of these problems that we get?
I think we're decades away from that happening, but the research is pushing that forward, and that's all of medicine. Stem cell research is is a huge aspect of the future of how we deliver healthcare.
Great. Thank you. Kat, who's up next?
I'm going to bring up Anna. Anna has a question for you both.
Hi,
Hi,
Dr.
Anna.
Zucker.
How are
Hi, Dr.
you?
Kepler. Thank you. This has
Hi,
been
Anna.
so fascinating. My question is kind of similar to Kat's, but one thing I feel like I've noticed or I've seen a shift in the public interest towards a more natural approaches to oral health. And I'm getting served a ton of ads for gum that has things like xylitol or I'm going to totally butcher this, hydro.
Hydroxyapatite.
Yes, hydroxyapatite. And even like oil pulling, those kinds of things that are, I feel they're gaining traction. I guess especially for people who are looking for fluoride-free options. From the ADA's perspective, how are these alternatives evaluated in terms of their clinical efficiency, safety, and like their long-term outcomes? Are there
Oh.
specific benchmarks or research standards that need to be met before they could be considered on par with fluoride-based treatments?
What a great question. So, first of all, ADA is the convener of all the oral health entities to determine the standards of everything that is used in dentistry. And so, every several times a year, we get together and convene all of these experts to determine what these standards are. So, does hydroxyapatite, do things to reduce decay? Absolutely. Does oil pulling do things to help, reduce decay and help the gums, improve their health? Absolutely not. There's no research that shows that it meets the standard of other mouthwashes that are in place that do improve gum health. The standards are there. Another easy way for consumers to determine is this a good product or not? Is it doing what it says? The ADA has a seal program, a seal of approval, and these products are really scrutinized through our Science and Research Institute to determine is it doing what it says it's going to do based on the standards. And so that ADA seal of approval is stamped on the backs of those toothpaste and those mouthwashes, those toothbrushes. And it's a quick, easy way to determine if it is scientifically proven to do what it says it's going to do.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Anna,
Anna.
I get those ads too.
Do
I do get those ads. And I was wondering, it's because I was doing all this searching, a couple months ago about fluoride. And then I said, you know how the internet works. Suddenly they see my name, see that you're looking at that. And the next thing you know, you're getting ads. So I get them as well. And so
Okay,
it's a
well, that's
great
good to
question.
know.
Thank you. That's
Thank
exactly,
you.
yeah,
Thank
perfect.
you. That's our next topic. Why are we getting served these
Yeah,
ads?
right. That's a good point. That is a very good point.
Thank you, Dr.
Yeah,
Zucker. Thank
thank
you.
you.
That's
Thank you,
fine. Thanks,
Anna.
Britt. Kat, who else do we have? Did we lose Kat? Oh, no.
No, I'm here. I was just muted, but I have
Okay.
Ronnie Furess here with
Hi.
the question.
Hi, Dr. Zucker. Hi, Dr.
Ronnie.
Kessler.
Hi, Ronnie.
I am beyond excited to speak to Dr. Kessler because this is my biggest medical issue is dental care. I lost my two frontals in a bicycle accident when I was 11. And my mother went back to the scene of the accident, brought the teeth to the pediatrist, and put them back in. I had braces. I've spent my entire life in restoration land. I've spent so much money, could have put several kids through college with the amount of money that has been put into my mouth. And I feel so grateful to hear you say that you are working to try to figure out why dentistry is not equal to health, because I've just had to have six implants put in, two of them failed, and this is a temp, and I've been just tormented, through this whole process, not to mention the costs. So I offer up my services. If you ever go before Congress, I would testify to how much pain, suffering, and money has been spent just to have teeth. It just doesn't seem right. So anyway, my question about fluoride is, this is what from what I understand a byproduct of waste material, and that's what I've heard. And I'm just trying to understand how fluoride, is made, and why people are objecting to it because they think it's, an industrial waste byproduct.
Yeah. So first, I'm so sorry to hear of your lifetime of dental woes. This is a much too common story. And and it's unfortunate because if it was like a cheekbone fracture, you'd have a much different experience because the medical insurance would be covering that over the course of your lifetime. And dentistry, for somehow, some reason, has been disconnected from all of those benefits. So I apologize for that. And you just know you're not alone. And we are working hard to reconnect the mouth to the body with all the systems.
Thank you.
Fluoride is a naturally occurring mineral in our world and the earth. And sometimes it is used in industry, but it's not industrial waste per se. It naturally occurs in many water supplies around the world. And like I said, we found it to be a useful deterrent to dental cavities through that happenstance in Colorado Springs. So, like I said before, too much of anything is not good. Everything in moderation. And we've through 70 years of it being in the field, we know it works. We know it has minimal to no side effects at the levels that we are recommending.
And for babies who take it in through formula and through water and all kind, is there any risk of them being overexposed to the levels of fluoride that are considered safe by the ADA and the CDC?
Right. The levels that are just determined by the CDC takes that into account to minimize those risks. See what happens in the growing dentition and the growing teeth as they're developing. Fluoride in the water, integrates into the lattice work of the enamel and the dentin, and makes it much harder and much more resistant to the sugar insults that happen when we eat. And so it integrates into the development of the tooth and makes it much more resistant. So the, and it at the level that it's at right now, it's optimized to do that with zero risk.
Got it. Thank you. And my offer still stands to support the changeover for reimbursement, if that
Thank
ever
you,
is
Ronnie. We will
needed.
take you up on that
Yeah.
because
Thank you.
we need to hear, they need to hear your story.
Thank you.
Going to
Thank you
take
so
Ronnie.
much.
And I'm going to ask one more thing. Let's say one more thing. So, is oral health health? We know that improving oral health will improve systemic health. And then, so we say oral health is health. We know that as dentists. You know it as a long chronic patient. I hate to say that.
That's
Okay.
true.
But then the next question is healthcare a privilege or is it a right in this country? And unfortunately, in the dentistry world, it's a privilege.
Right.
And if you have money, you can get these kind of care. If you don't, you can't. And that's a crime. That is an absolute crime.
And when you were speaking earlier, Dr. Zucker, about the European model, like no offense to people, in Europe, but there are a lot of people with not great teeth in those parts of the world, and I mean, obviously people have priorities, but I do agree that oral health is health, and it is systemic to other issues, especially heart issues and things like that. So I'm obviously in agreement, and hope people heed this and understand how important it is. So thank you for all you're doing. Thank you,
Thank
Dr.
you, Ronnie.
Zucker.
Thank you. And what Ronnie mentioned before, in Europe, there are challenges, but then in Denmark and in Belgium, where they have a lot of dental health care that is covered by the government, their teeth are better. So
Right.
right there, you could see the benefits of providing health care on a universal level, including dental care.
Yeah, and I could quote here in America, when the Affordable Care Act was determined that children's dental health as an essential benefit, meaning any kid anywhere should have access to a minimal amount of dentistry to keep them healthy. Okay, we've seen decline in cavity rates because we put time, effort, and money towards that demographic. Going back to the senior demographic, we've seen an increase in cavity rates because there are no benefits to support that. And that's what really needs to change.
Great. Yes, very, very important point. Very important point. Kat, who
Yeah.
else is up?
I'm going to bring up John. John has a question or a few for you guys.
Okay.
Hi, Dr. Kessler. Thank you so much.
Hi, John.
Hi. By the way, this is the longest conversation I ever had with a dentist that didn't have classical music playing.
In my office, it was always classic rock.
Oh, so. Okay. There you go. This has been really informative. Thank you. I wonder what kind of questions you're getting from your patients and what their concerns are. And do they buy into the skepticism? Do they want reassurance? What are they asking you?
Yeah, so I'll just full disclosure, I'm not practicing right now as president of the American Dental Association. I'm on the road an awful lot, so I'm not in practice. But you know, hearing from my colleagues, there's a growing number of questions from our patients about, is fluoride safe? Should I have fluoride? Or many that don't want fluoride. And, you know, we have to respect our patients' wishes. But if they're not going to choose fluoride, like I said before, we have to find ways to reduce their risk for cavities. And that is diet related. That is an absolute diligence with their oral hygiene, of brushing, flossing. If they're using non-fluoridated toothpaste, what can they do to bring the pH up in their mouth? Because at a lower pH in our mouth, that's when the teeth are most vulnerable to decay. And so we're trying, you know, as on a one-on-one, one-by-one patient encounter, we're trying to raise their oral health literacy if they're going to choose to not want any kind of products with fluoride in them. Because, you know, ignoring the realities of today will not allow us to avoid the consequences of ignoring the realities today. Okay. And just because you don't believe it doesn't mean it won't happen. Science says it will happen. Cavity rates will go up.
Thank you. One other just clarification, are children more susceptible to cavities than adults, or do adults have to worry about fluoride going away as well?
Great question. In the kids, first of all, they're not very diligent with their oral hygiene and they're not very careful with their diet. And adults, they're not very diligent with their oral hygiene and they're not very careful with their diet. So, but kids will see an increase in risk because the teeth will not develop with the fluoride in the lattice work. And so they'll be doomed to a lifetime of dental, dental work and a lot of time in the dental chair that could be avoided. Adults, the bathing of their teeth with fluoridated water is a constant, strengthener to help remineralize the teeth in real time. And it does help, and it will make teeth, especially in older adults, much more vulnerable to decay. As people get older, there's a lot more root of the teeth that become exposed where the gums recede and things like that. And the roots are very soft compared to the crowns where the enamel is. And so those roots are very vulnerable. And that's how, from what I see in the aging population, is one of the biggest reason for tooth loss, root cavities.
So just to be sure I have this correct, you're saying that in the kids, that the adult tooth that's not out yet, is the fluoride is going to protect that tooth, and the baby tooth that's above it, you know, it may get a cavity or not, but surely that tooth below that's going to come in one day is going to be better once the fluoride is in the water, with the fluoride in the water.
Right, because the fluoride is you know, at the right level that is recommended by the CDC. It gets into the bloodstream and it gets into the developing tooth bud, and it strengthens the lattice work of that tooth over the course of the lifetime of that tooth, which in ideal, it should outlast the human. The teeth should outlast you. That's the goal in dentistry.
I've heard that before, that you should, unfortunately, your teeth should still be there when you unfortunately, pass. So
yes.
Kat, thank you. John, any other questions, John?
No, thanks so much. This has been fascinating.
Thank you, John.
Dr. Z, I did get a question from someone in the chat. They don't want to be on camera, which is okay. Fine. I will ask it and try not to butcher all of these very medical heavy words. But the question is, how available is Curodont and hydroxyapatite and calcium hydroxide that you mentioned? How available is that in the United States? And can these products be used if there is no more fluoride in the water in the United States?
Yeah, so the hydroxyapatite, calcium hydroxide, it's in toothpaste now, and especially in it's in all toothpastes. And so, you know, make sure that that's one of the ingredients in your toothpaste that you're using, especially if you're averse to wanting to have fluoride as well. Curadont is something that is it's delivered at the dental office as a remineralization, professional remineralization strategy. You know, I'll give a scenario here with AI. Okay, how can we use technology in dentistry right now? And AI has found a place in helping us read x-rays, and we can see defects at the earliest possible stage through the use of artificial and augmented intelligence. My eyes, I can detect 12 shades of gray. The computer, the AI, can detect 1,056 shades of gray. And in an x-ray, basically an x-ray shows darkness where there's a defect, where there's a void of the enamel or the dentin of the tooth. And so if we can catch that change at the very earliest stage and then paint something on there that remineralizes it, that tooth will never need a filling. And we'll, you know, like I said before, that first filling turns to another filling, which turns to another filling, which turns to a crown, root canal, new crown, extraction, implant. So there's a whole, you know, economy of that tooth that will be avoided, and the amount of hours that patient will have to serve in the dental chair will be gone.
Wow. Big key point, a very big point.
Yeah. Dentistry knows how to do prevention. And that's what we're most proud of, and we're the best at it. And that's why I think that we can really help in primary care as well, because patients come in to see us usually in a preventative mindset. They most don't go to their doctors for prevention. They go to their doctors when something's wrong. I'm saying physicians, not just doctors, but their physicians. And in dentistry, they come in a proactive mindset, preventative mindset, and we can do screenings if the system will allow us, the benefit system will allow us, so we can really help to address a lot of the primary care medical issues in the communities we're serving.
And you have an opportunity to talk to them about other health issues right there when they're sitting
yep.
there. As long as there's nothing in their mouth at that moment, right?
Right. No, we talk while they're in their mouth. You know that.
Oh, that's the best, true.
Yeah, we just that's how we get you to teach, you know, learn how to floss and things like that.
There was just one follow-up. Is Curadont it expensive, or is it a relatively accessible alternative?
It's everything's relative. You know, what is expensive? There are some Medicaid benefit systems that are paying for Curadont treatments at the same level as a filling. And so we're starting to see that trickle into the dental benefit industry as a reimbursable procedure. And so so minimal out of pocket in those situations. I can't tell you where and how many, but we're seeing it grow.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Kessler. You have shared an amazing amount of information on fluoride, but also on oral health in general, what the government should be doing to improve access to healthcare, which is very important, particularly in this day and age. So we really appreciate all your coming on the podcast and sharing this important information. That is it for our show today. But remember, if you are a Docology subscriber, you can join the show. You just have to click on the link in the bio. So tune in next time, because the topic we cover may just save your life.
Thank you so much.
Docology is a production of Hang Media. Our producer is Catherine Warren. Ronnie Selig is editorial advisor. Our creative director is Anna Richard. Janine Wilson of Wilson Media Group handles paid marketing. Our publicists are Leslie Ann Wade and Jerry Caracoli. Theme music was composed by Nick Kitts. Subscribe and join our community at docology.life. Until next time, move, wash your hands, and stay healthy.